ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। Speaking here on behalf of, in pursuance of the order of, by the mercy of, and according to the instructions received from His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Today I want to speak about something not directly spiritual at all, but something that Srila Prabhupada spoke about a lot, because Srila Prabhupada took the position, not wholly and solely as a spiritual leader, but also as he saw that the Krishna conscious movement is a movement of brahmanas who are supposed to advise society for its better good. So one of the things Srila Prabhupada spoke about quite a lot and quite firmly was the whole system of society itself. Now, India is in the middle of a almost 2 months exercise in democracy, voting. Have you exercised your vote? You're not a good citizen. Do you pay taxes? No, you don't earn any money. Not good citizens. So, Srila Prabhupada, writing in independent India, democratic India, in the early 1960s, sitting in part of India, part of Uttar Pradesh, in Mathura district, Vrindavan, which is actually not part of India in the real sense of the term, in as much as it's part of the spiritual world, but people in Vrindavan will also be voting. It's from the social, political point of view, it's part of India. So Srila Prabhupada, writing his purports to the first canto of Bhagavatam, wrote about the system of, well, he mentioned about the system of voting in his purport to this. The verse itself is seminal in as much as it could be expanded, and the import of it reaches every part of human life. It gives direction to how human life should be led. So it's a very important verse, and Srila Prabhupada's purport is also very important for seeing the whole direction of our individual lives and of the whole society, how it should be set up. The verse is as follows. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 10. Kamasya nendriya pritir labho jiveta yavata jivasya tatva jignyasa narto yascheha karma bihi. I'm going to read from several purports, but I'm not going to read all of it. I'm going to read the parts which are particularly relevant to the subject of democracy, what I'm going to be speaking about. My topic, which I will probably go over 2 days, 2 sessions, is democracy has failed, especially in India. So the translation of this verse, which I just read: life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. This is for everyone. It's not just for yogis. It's meant for everyone. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's works. And if that wasn't heavy enough, wait for the first line of the purport. The completely bewildered material civilization is wrongly directed toward the fulfillment of desires and sense gratification. Go read that in the Lok Sabha. should. They shouldn't even be sitting there unless they're reading these books. The completely bewildered material civilization. There was a few years ago an attack on the Lok Sabha, right? By some terrorists. 2008. I won't comment here any further. The completely bewildered material civilization is wrongly directed toward the fulfillment of desires in sense gratification. Lok Sabha, it's the Sanskritization of the House of Commons. The Lok translates commons, common people, Aam Aadmi types. And then there's a party by that name. So Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha is supposed to be the House of Lords. It's supposed to be a parallel of that from the British parliamentary system. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada, he continues this purport. Remember, Srila Prabhupada is sitting in Vrindavan in a very peaceful, totally spiritual atmosphere, far away from the hustle and bustle of the big city of Delhi. He's thinking of the whole world as he's writing this. He's very clearly writing this for the whole world. So Prabhupada writes, in such civilization, in all spheres of life, the ultimate end is sense gratification. In politics, he gives a list, and first of all, he says, in politics, social service, altruism, philanthropy, and ultimately in religion or even in salvation, the very tint of sense gratification is ever increasingly predominant. In the political field, the leaders of men fight with one another to fulfill their personal sense gratification. That's a one-line summary of the Indian election going on at the present time. In the political field, the leaders of men fight with one another to fulfill their personal sense gratification. And the funny thing is everyone knows it. No one says it. Although the politicians accuse each other. But people actually believe that they're voting for politicians who have their own self-interest, who have the voters' interest at heart. Now, here's a key point. The voters adore the so-called leaders only when they promise sense gratification. As soon as the voters are dissatisfied in their own sense satisfaction, they dethrone the leaders. The leaders must always disappoint the voters by not satisfying their senses. So this is democracy. They promise so many things. People vote for them. They don't fulfill the promise. They throw them out for someone who gives another bunch of promises, and it goes on like that. It goes on like that, on and on and on like that. So we can see that Srila Prabhupada was not in favor of democracy. He actually said he preferred dictatorship. That democracy is not a good system was openly said by Winston Churchill, who's supposed to be one of the great heroes of democracy. He fought a war. He didn't fight it, but well, he was behind the scenes, smoking his cigars in the bunker. To overcome fascism. He said it was a very bad system. It's a famous quote of Winston Churchill that he said, well, democracy is a terrible system of administration, but it's the best one we have. Srila Prabhupada disagreed. He called it demon crazy. Crazy demon. They don't know. Nate vidu swarta gating hi vishnam. This section of the purport we just read is all interlinked. They don't know that the goal of life is Vishnu, and so what have they got? Sense gratification. Now, in the countries of the world where democracy, so-called democracy, is the de facto or the installed system of governance, it's treated as if it were sacred. That you're against democratic principles. Yeah, you have to follow the constitution. It's almost as if it's sacred, and the idea that someone's a dictator or they're becoming a dictator, there's protest against Trump in America, and they protest against Putin in Putin is the Russian pronunciation in Russia, and Modi in India, this too autocratic, as if democracy is sacred. That we have to have democracy. It's obviously the best, you know, it's the fair system and best for everyone. But actually it was imposed on India. It wasn't that there was a democratic vote to have democracy. It was just given. Okay, now you're going to be democratic and you have to vote. And it's supposed to be a great victory for the Indian, the Western people applauded them. Very good, you instituted democracy. Of course, they wanted it. It's their system of exploit. They're able to exploit very easily. In England, the Chinese people, there's a derogatory term for Chinese, chinks. They're called chinks. But one thing is, the Chinese, they're so careful. They don't let the other outside powers get a chink into their whole culture. They're very, very strong to keep them out. Whereas in India, it's doors open. Okay, come in and just influence in so many ways. So there's this idea, freedom, individuality, all these things. But actually, fixed rules, fixed roles, we're talking, when Srila Prabhupada was talking about dictatorship, he was actually not in the terms of fascism or a Stalin or some, but in terms of the Varnashram system. Maybe I should read that now. I'll go to, there's a, about Yudhishthira Maharaj being an autocratic dictator. So this is a discussion of Yudhishthira Maharaj from Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text 18. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the forefathers of King Yudhishthira were all great saintly kings, pious and glorified by their great achievements. They were all saints on the royal throne. What was the last saint who was a saintly leader? Saintly leader of the state? Mahatma Gandhi, he never led a state. He was supposed to be a saintly leader, but he never, nor could he have ever been the leader because he was too impractical, actually, with his non-violence and all this and that. Non-violence and be fair means give all the weapons to Pakistan, and they immediately attacked India. Wasn't it? When there was the division of India into Pakistan, all the munitions and weapons were in India, not in Pakistan. So the Pakistan said, no, we don't have any weapons. Gandhi said, give it to them, you've got to be fair. So what did they do? They organized an army and attacked India. His brilliant high principles. By his non-violence and being fair, so many thousands of people had to die. So they were all saints on the royal throne. And therefore all the members of the state were happy, pious, well-behaved, prosperous, and spiritually enlightened. Do we see that in the modern age? Under democracy, all the members of the state were happy, pious? The word pious doesn't even enter into the picture. Now we're going to bring in a party that's going to make all the people pious. Here in India, there's the BJP, which is supposed to be the Hindutva party, but there's no talk about how people should be pious. No such thing. Well-behaved? Politicians themselves are not well-behaved. prosperous, that's the only thing they promise, but they don't deliver, and spiritually enlightened, under strict guidance, hear this, strict guidance of the great souls and spiritual injunctions, such great saintly kings were trained up, and as a result, the kingdom was full of saintly persons, and was a happy land of spiritual life. I'll skip a bit. That is the way of the monarchical state. The reigning king should be a pious, chivalrous devotee of the Lord, and fear personified for the upstarts. The people who want to exploit others, they should have no opportunity. The saintly kings should be so powerful, they punish them. In the modern setup of the democratic states, this is Srila Prabhupada writing in the 1960s in India, in Vrindavan. In the modern setup of the democratic states, the people themselves are fallen to the qualities of Shudras or less, and the government is run by their representative, who is ignorant of the scriptural mode of administrative education. Thus, the whole atmosphere is surcharged with Shudra qualifies manifested by lust and avarice. So what's the problem? What's the problem in society today? Srila Prabhupada is pointing that democracy itself is a problem. Root cause of so many problems. Because the leadership is leadership by the lowest strata of people. Everyone wants to exploit the state resources till he dies. Now, in this regard, I want to read a quote from Srila Prabhupada. He's talking about voting. The common man has no sense whom to elect. He proves this by electing an unqualified leader and later trying to change him or pull him down. Meanwhile, thousands of bureaucrats live off the taxes of the people and spend their time planning how to keep themselves in power. With democracy, people are just trying to keep them. The main thing when you get in power is to keep yourself in power. Instead of thinking how to actually benefit the people, they have to think how to keep themselves in power. So, getting back to this purport, no one retires from political life unless forced to do so. How can such low-grade men do good to the people? The result is corruption, intrigue, and hypocrisy. That's it. What has India got in all these years of democracy? Corruption, intrigue, and hypocrisy. They should learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam how ideal the administrators must be before they can be given charge of different posts. Then on to the purport to the next verse. Where are we here? Oh. Where are we? 1:10:3. No, that was Parikshit Maharaj. Ah. Okay. So, talking, yeah. Maharaj Yudhishthira. This is from Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text 3. Maharaj Yudhishthira was not a typically unenlightened political leader of modern democracy. The modern elected executive head of state is just like a puppet because he has no kingly power. Even if he is enlightened like Maharaj Yudhishthira, he cannot do anything out of his own goodwill due to his constitutional position. Therefore, there are so many states over the earth quarreling because of ideological differences or other selfish motives. So we're talking about ideological differences. There's this. When Srila Prabhupada was writing this, there was the Cold War between the democratic states of the West and the communist world of Russia and China. And prior to that, there had been the Second World War between fascists and the democratic states on one side and the communists on the other side. So it's all over ideology. So this is a discussion here of Maharaj Yudhishthira. What was Maharaj Yudhishthira's ideology? We think it's more, not democratic, was it more like fascism, or what do you think? It would be more like fascism. Okay, here's what... It's all, there's all inclusive, you say. Here's what Prabhupada writes. A king like Maharaj Yudhishthira had no ideology of his own. He didn't think, well, I'm going to be a fascist or a communist. He just, the point is, he had only to follow the instructions of the infallible Lord and the Lord's representatives and the authorized agent, Bhishma Dev. In other words, the Shastra is there, the tradition is there, you become a king and you just follow, you just do the way that it's been done, purvaya purvataram kritam, as it was done previously, that's all. You don't have to you don't have to make laws all the time, sitting dreaming up new laws all the time, just whatever's there, you just do that. That's all. You just follow the previous system. That's what we're talking about, Varnashram. What, it's a new system. It's not a new system. It's the same old thing. And we don't have to think this way, that way, another way. Just do what's in the Shastra. It is instructed in the Shastras that one should follow the great authority and the infallible Lord without any personal motive and manufactured ideology. So what is the system? Dharma. And then who can... Dharma is given by the Lord? Not by the... That verse is there in the sixth canto. Yamaraj says it's not... That it's not given by the charanas, guhyakas, or it's none of them can give it. Only the Supreme Lord Himself. But one has to execute that without any personal motive and manufactured ideology, Srila Prabhupada writes here. Dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat parinitam. An imperfect human being cannot create an ideology acceptable to everyone. Only the perfect and infallible can create a program which is applicable at every place and can be followed by all in the world. It is the person who rules and not the impersonal government. If the person is perfect, the government is perfect. If the person is a fool, the government is a fool's paradise. So there's a few quotes from Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, democracy is an imposition in India. It presumes, the idea of democracy is it presumes that people are intelligent and they're informed and they know what they're voting about. That they have enough sense to understand what they're, who, someone has one program, he says, I'll do this, I'll do that, some, and then they have enough sense to vote in the proper way. But you have people who they don't have any idea who can understand about all the intricacies of economics and geopolitics and all the things you're supposed to understand. And even if, just like in Sri Lanka, there's a democracy there. So Vasudev Datta, he met one of the ministers. This was a few years ago, and said, "Well, why don't you bring a dharmic rule?" He said, "Yeah, we'd like to, but we can't. We're a small country, and we have to do what there are external forces which we have to be aware of. We can't do just whatever we like to in this small country." So that's the way it is. That's the reality. Real politic. There's a word, real politic. You can go to university and study political science. I don't think there's much study of that in India. They're more practical. Engineering's the big... But in England, there's a lot of people waste their time studying political science in the universities. And they all become armchair socialists. Every one of them. So the idea of democracy, it's supposed to be good because it guards against the excesses of dictatorship. Here Prabhupada is advocating dictatorship, autocracy. But people, they're very afraid of that, dictatorship. If everyone can vote, then there can't be dictatorship. But the fact is, as we see in the world today, that the the people who are intelligent in an exploitive way and powerful, whatever the system is, they'll exploit it. There was communism, and George Orwell, in his, he had two famous books, one 1984, and his two by far the most famous of his books. One was Animal Farm, how all the animals rebelled against the owner of the farm and made a communistic system. But after some time, the pigs, who are the most intelligent, they became the leaders, and they were just like, exactly like the people they'd thrown out. But in the name of equality, they just exploited, they just became the same. So the intelligent and the powerful will always exploit the weak. And we see that in America today, which is supposed to be the great bastion of democracy, for the last so many years, the rich have, there's a small segment of society who are very, very rich, and they're getting richer and richer and richer, and the lower sector of society becoming poorer and poorer and poorer. So if it's supposed to be democracy, then how does that happen? It's just people, they by money power, they control the system. That means it doesn't matter who comes into power, whether they have two parties, Democrat and Republican, and whoever comes into power, it's not going to affect the way the money system works, the powers, the powers with the money, and the way they set up this thing, corporatocracy, by which if a corporation does all kinds of horrendous things, which they do all the time, from time to time, the corporation may be taken to court, and then they're fined $2 billion. Monsanto just got fined $2 billion. But the people, the members of the corporation, they don't go to jail. Just so it's for companies like Shell, BP, who there was a, not so long ago, 3-4 years ago, there was a huge oil bust just off the, in the Gulf of Mexico. The members of the the leaders of the corporations, they're not responsible. Just the corporation gets fined, and they calculate it into their business plan. That at some point we're going to get done, we're going to get fined $500 million or something. So it's all calculated. And so corporatocracy goes on. And it's not democracy. There's no vote is going to change. In America, there's no vote that's going to change the rich getting richer, richer and the poor getting poorer. There's no vote that's going to change the huge amounts of money pumped into the military for killing people all over the world. Even if most of the American people don't like it. If you ask most of the American people, do you want your government to kill people all over the world? Most of them will say no. We presume. Maybe some of them do want them to kill people all over the world. But it's the way back at the time of the Second World War, there was Harry Truman, was it? American president, warned against the military-industrial complex. He warned, it's going on. So no vote's going to change that. It's the system is set up. The rich people control the very rich control the mass media, and that's the way it goes on. In democracy, so much time and energy and money is wasted on elections. Who pays for that? The average taxpayer pays to have all these people waste their time and divert their energy. They could, if they're actually leaders, they could be doing something more useful. But even when the elections are over, they're immediately thinking of the next election. And mostly they have to be just like some actors. They have to know how to act in such a way that will please the people so they get the vote. It's said that one politician in New York, they auditioned different people for this. Okay, we want a politician who will push our agenda. So they auditioned different actors and actresses, and they came up one who's a good actor. They can do the job. Ronald Reagan, actor, became the most, supposed to be the most powerful politician in the world. Here in India, when actors, especially actresses, retire, then the second phase of their career is to be a politician. It's good money. So much time and energy, money is wasted in elections, in changing governments, changing policies. Hundreds of people sit in the parliament, useless. Well, they just have one person with a few ministers who know how to direct them. And so much resources of the state goes into maintaining this whole big apparatus, which doesn't work very effectively at all anyway. And in America also, the government was shut down for some time, especially if you have a hung parliament. We have this party system here in India, which isn't very democratic actually, because what happens is one party may get less votes but still win the election. Or in the presidential system in America, Trump got less votes last time than Clinton, but he still won the election. And in England, in the last couple of general elections, well, it always happens, actually. The Liberals, who are now called the Liberal Democrats, they're the number three party, but they only get they get far less seats than their number of votes, because in each constituency, it's winner takes all. So the number three party may get, say, 25% of the vote throughout the country, but only get 5 or 6 seats, because they come in number three in most of the constituencies. So if you're voting for parties, then it's not democratic in that way either. So even the idea, and the democracy, it fosters argument, endless arguments, divisiveness, always people against each other, corruption. Can buy your vote. Yudhishthira are not corrupt. And the kings also, they're so rich, they're allowed to be rich. Difficult to bribe, let's put it like that. The politicians in India especially, they're very dangerously divisive, because here in India, the democracy, it's different communities are seen as vote banks, and so the whole parties are founded, practically their whole ideology is against a section of the community. Just like, they have Muslim parties, which means practically they're against non-Muslims. That's the way it works, factually speaking. It might be a little dangerous to say it, but everyone knows it. The ruling party, and we don't know, the party that's been in power for the last few years is widely seen, although they will deny it, as being anti-minorities. You have the parties like the BSP, which is, by its very title, it's against all the upper castes, Bahujan Samaj. That means all the lower strata of society. So by their very setup, they're set up to be against a whole section, for one section of society and against the other. Communism is against the rich. So in this way, although communism in India works within the democratic system. As far as I know, the Communist Party has only come to power in India only in three states: West Bengal, Kerala, and Tripura. I don't think it ever came anywhere else. But they can't really be communists, because they have to work in the democratic setup. But their whole thing is it's against the rich, for the poor man, like this. So in this way, in India especially, the democracy has been based on turning people against each other. Now, in the system that Srila Prabhupada is advocating here, the ancient system that was there in India, there were fixed rules, not that you're changing the rules all the time, making new, a new party comes in and they bring a completely different set of policies. That was in the communist times in Russia, they always found that very confusing, because they'd have to deal with one American president, and then he has a whole outlook, and then they deal with another one who has a completely different outlook. At least in the communist system, it was, they had a fixed outlook all the time. It was, so fixed rules and fixed roles. It's not that someone's an entertainer today and a leader or politician tomorrow. You have a fixed role. You have a fixed role to play. And a clear authority system. And that brings peace and stability. If there is a fixed authority system, then it brings peace and stability. It's not necessarily brings in all good qualities. But at least the society is stable and peaceful, and people's minds are peaceful also, because if you don't have any political power, then you're not, your mind is not agitated. And if someone doesn't come to agitate you, that you should vote this way or that way, go on a demonstration, there's no such thing. There, someone is there in society, they're a doctor, okay, they're a doctor. Someone is there in society, he's a teacher, okay, he's the teacher. And someone in society, he's an administrator and a politician. It's not that everyone is supposed to be a... not that everyone can be a doctor and a teacher and an electrician and a farmer, and everyone is a politician also, which is the promise of democracy. So in the so-called democratic society, at least they talk about freedom, individuality, equal rights, but what does it actually lead to? It leads to multiple opinions, unnecessary discussion and agitation. Everyone's mind is agitated. Very cumbersome administrative systems, the main aim of which is the people who are in the system are trying to keep themselves in a job. That's their main thing. And as long as they're in the job, they're trying to get as much money as they can out of the people they're supposed to be acting for the benefit of. And then encouragement for... The political system encourages politics in the worst sense of the term. It encourages it by its very nature. It gives itself to plotting and intrigues, ego clashes. What's the main thing? If you see the if you see the politicians in India, mostly they're just, well, what's their policies, actually? We don't really know, because the main thing they're doing is just calling each other bad names. And what value is that to anyone, that they just call each other bad names? We don't really know. We can hardly understand what they stand for. The main thing they stand for is just that they hate each other. That's all. And the funny thing is, they'll hate each other, but then after the election, if no party gets a majority, they're not the same ones who have been calling each other the worst names. They'll come together and say, hey, come on, let's get together. We need to get together so we can share the power, because if we don't, then someone else will get the power. So in this way, they're blah, 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 fighting with each other, and then they make some kind of union, but actually they hate each other, but they've come together so they can get political power. It's a terrible system. And then again, they break up. Terrible, terrible system. Power struggles, overall confusion, instability. Democracy, by its, it, especially in India, brings this instability, change of outlook and everything on, and degradation of character. This system cannot uphold good character, because there's no one to enforce that. So all in all, it's a terrible system. Unnecessarily agitates the minds. Broken promises. Now let's go back a few years. Clean the Ganga. Bring all the black money from overseas so that every Indian citizen will get 15 lakhs. What else? Build a wall, a fence around Bangladesh so there's no more infiltration. What other promises? Fabulous promises. Huh? Building the Ram temple. Did they promise that? Yeah. It was in their manifesto. Building a Ram temple in Ayodhya. Acheh Din. That was their motto. That was 5 years ago and no one says it anymore. Good days are coming in. So it's like that. And whoever comes in, they make promises and they don't fulfill them. In most cases. It's not always true. There was in 1972 in Australia, the guy promised that if you vote me in, we'll be out of Vietnam. Australian troops are in Vietnam, and within 2 weeks, they were out. Within 2 weeks of coming into power, they withdrew all their troops from. So it's not necessarily true that they don't fulfill their promise, but in many cases, they don't. Or they make fantastic promises which they can't fulfill. Or they do things to get the vote which are actually not good for the country or for the people. Just like in Tamil Nadu, they have this system that the guaranteed work. If you don't have a job, then you sign up in the government, sign the book, and we'll give you 300 rupees a day and we'll give you employment for 8 hours a day. So what happens is people go, they sign up, they give 100 rupees to the clerk, take 200 and sleep all day. And you can't get agricultural labor because people get money for doing nothing. And who has to pay are the people who are working. That's a big grudge in England too, where they have the dole system. People who are not working, they get given money by the government and the people who are working have to pay for that. And in many cases, the people who are not working, it's not that they can't work, but they get money for doing nothing and they spend the money on drugs and this and that. Actually, one thing I thought, that if we want democracy and everyone has their say, then in the modern age, you can have a real democracy. You can have a referendum on every single issue by internet voting. Why not? Then you don't need a parliament. Then every single thing you can vote for on the internet. Will they do that? No. It wouldn't work very well, actually, because people haven't got a clue what they're doing. Even the politicians themselves, just like a film actress, what does she know about administration and this and that? But it's a common thing. The actresses become politician. So actually there should be training. I'll get back to that point. Just like engineers are trained, doctors are trained, politicians or leaders of society, they should be trained also. Another possibility, I was just ruminating on this, there could be a voluntary taxation system. Then no one could complain. If you want India to maintain a massive army, then you give tax for that. If you don't, you don't. The only thing is, you might find out that the capital of India in gets shifted to Islamabad pretty quick if you don't keep a big army. That'd be an interesting thing. Voluntary taxes. How about that? I wonder how that would work. If it's supposed to be that the individual has control of their destiny. Because most of the taxes people pay, they don't want to pay. But if they feel happy, yes, I'm getting water, supply, I'm getting a good police system, then they may voluntarily give. It would work if people were not so selfish. It might work. But why should you pay taxes, actually, if just like, for instance, you can't walk on the street if you don't feel safe to walk on the street, then why are you paying taxes? The government's supposed to protect. If the police can't protect you, then why are you paying for a police force? Big questions. One thing, I regularly visit, or have been for many years, visiting countries in the Gulf, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, especially these places. They don't have democracy. You don't find people protesting for democracy. It goes on. The leaders, they provide basic facilities for everyone. You lived in Dubai for how many years? 8 years? 15 years? 15 years. So do you ever find any agitations for democracy? But people's needs are fulfilled, right? So they had no... Huh?
Very nicely.
Very nicely, yeah. So... actually, in Dubai is some small miracle how they turned it from a desert trading post to a city, internationally famous city-state. That was done by the leaders, actually, because they had that vision to do that. So in that case, we could say that it's worked very well for those countries. And if you have democracy and then they're always fighting, agitating, having placards and demonstrating in the streets, what's the use? That's closely associated with Islamic culture, actually, because Islam arose in the world at a time where there was no idea of democracy. There were rulers who were understood to be representatives of God on this world. That was there in the Christian world, in the Islamic world, in the Hindu world, in the Buddhist world. As people became godless, then these systems broke down. Okay, I plan on speaking about that more tomorrow. There's many things could be said. You're all supposed to be giving guidance to the leaders of society. They're not ready to listen, it seems, but Srila Prabhupada wanted to train his followers so they could give guidance how to run the society properly instead of this demon crazy. Anything you all want to say? There are many things to say, no doubt.
This drone system you mentioned.
They must use the same word in Australia, huh? Dole. Yeah. Welfare system. People take the dole money and then they work illegally without paying taxes. They work illegally in someone's garage or something like that. And
cooks in kitchens,
yeah. In America, they have the whole Mexican, and everyone knows there are hundreds and thousands of Mexicans. There's a minimum wage, but the Mexicans get paid less than the minimum wage. They have no rights, no taxes, nothing. It's a major part of, just like in India, a major part of the economy has been the black economy. It's big, as big or bigger than the white economy. So in America also, there are so many Mexicans. They have no rights and nothing, but they're there, and everyone. What it was in California, there was so much agitation for among the. The agricultural workers, this is the 1950s, 1960s, for minimum wage and proper conditions. And then so they became unprofitable for the people to run their farms, their commercial farms. So they just then the people who agitated for a minimum wage, they were out of a job because the sub-minimum wage was given to the Mexicans who didn't mind to work for a pittance. They were happy because it's still more than they would get in Mexico, and the difference in value between the American dollar and the Mexican peso is such that you can, just like people, they go from India to Dubai or America and they earn money there and they live very frugally there, and then they bring the money back to India because the value of money is the difference in value of the money you can earn there and save there, and then you can live like a king, theoretically, when you come back. Though it's changed in Dubai, there's not that much value in going to Dubai, actually, as it was previously. There's not such a big difference. So they were happy because they could send money back to their families and this and that, so they could survive. And of course, there are many very poor people in Mexico, and still the whole of South America and Latin America and the Caribbean has been kept poor by the United States of America deliberately. There's so many things to say. We don't even know the tip of the iceberg of all the horrible things that the demons are doing in the world. You can find out so many things on the internet nowadays. But what's the use? Finding out this and that. Hare Krishna. Ahankari mattohaya nitai pada pasharya ashatere shatta karimani. Insane people. They don't know Nityananda, and therefore they take unreality to be reality. Okay, Hare Krishna. That's all for now, and we can continue discussing tomorrow, Krishna willing, if we don't get locked up in the meantime. Is always possible. Manchakalpa Tarubhas Chakipa Sindhubhya Vichapati Dhanam Padma Yibhyo Vaishnava.